I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hey, everyone. Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight, and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.
Welcome to a best of edition of Almost Famous, where I've selected some of my favourite clips from the 19 episodes of the podcast we've done so far. This is the last episode of Series 2 of the podcast, but don't worry, Series 3 is starting in just a couple of weeks' time, so please, if you haven't already, do subscribe to Almost Famous in Apple Podcasts or wherever you get your favourite podcast fix. Leave us a comment if you can, and rate us too, that would be a really big help. Also, with the third series coming up and me recording them remotely during these strange COVID times, I'll be looking to engage with you guys a lot more directly. So if you have any questions, please do send them into our email address, which is almostpodcastfamous@gmail.com. That's almostpodcastfamous@gmail.com. Also, don't forget to find us on Instagram @almostfamousthepodcast and Twitter @podalmostfamous. First up on this best of episode are highlights from series one, where I interviewed guests who are either the children or siblings of famous people and who have chosen to follow them into a similar industry. Our first clip is from the first ever guest to come onto Almost Famous, Nicola Wren. Nicola is an actress and the sister of Coldplay's Chris Martin. In this excerpt from the show, she explains why she decided to change her surname from Martin to Wren, then gives her thoughts on the tabloid newspaper headlines and delicious freebies that followed, before offering us dessert in the form of explaining how Pizza Express was somewhat responsible for her losing her virginity.
Chris Martin's secret sister changes her name to a pizza to avoid the limelight, which came after I did. I went on Good Morning Britain, which I wish I'd never done.
It wasn't with Morgan, though, was it?
It wasn't with Morgan. I almost wish it had been, because then another person would have looked like an arsehole, except just me. But no, I thought it'd be good if I told this story about how when I was searching for my stage name, which I had to come up with because there was another Nicola Martin on the cast, the online casting directory, and also I wanted to kind of have a kind of mental separation from my brother, just because I was freaked out that people would think that if I got any success, it would be because of him. Anyway, I was searching for a stage name, and I was in Pizza Express, and I saw the Loren pizza on the menu, and I was like, Wren is a cool name. And then I realised that my grandmother was a Wren in the Second World War and chose the name. Anyway, I thought it'd be funny to just tell the Pizza Express story, which is in my show, on Good Morning Britain. And then I didn't realise that tabloid papers would only really pick that bit out to write about. So it haunts me to this day, but I did get a free pizza.
Well, I was going to say, so I saw on your Twitter that Pizza Express sent you a tweet. Did they retweet something you'd written? But I just thought you got Wren from La Wren, but actually it does work as Nico La Wren, which is what they then tweeted, which I thought was pretty clever.
I said it in the interview, because in the show I go, it's a whole bit where I'm like, La Wren, La Wren. Nico.
Got it.
La Wren. And so they stole it from me. Let's not give Pizza Express the credit for my material.
I apologise.
We can give them credit for their wonderful dough balls, but we can't give them credit for that. No, they tweeted me, and I was very excited about it. And then I asked on Twitter if I could have some free dough balls, and then sent them a YouTube video that I'd made of a character that I do sometimes called Georgia Kapupu.
Yeah, I've seen that. It's very funny.
Thank you. Who's a piss take of Georgia Kasulu, who was on... What even was she on?
I don't even know who that is.
She's someone of those. Anyway, where I talk about making little balls of dough out of bread, Anyway, I sent it to them because I'd called the video Powered by Dough, and I was like, you know, this is very on brand for me. Mm-hmm. I also lost my virginity after Pizza Express.
You can't glaze over that. Because I was going to say, actually, this is all getting a little bit off topic, but Pizza Express not in a bad way. Pizza Express has a huge part in my childhood, actually, and life. It's my when I would see my dad every fortnight. Okay. He would take us to Pizza Express on Upper Richmond Road on Friday, and there's a jukebox, so me and my brother would just be on the jukebox. Yeah, it's really lovely. And I've always ordered the same pizza at Pizza Express, a very big part of my life.
What is it?
An American with extra ham and soft egg.
Okay, I would never have guessed that. Garlic. Because it's not on the menu.
Well, the American is on the menu, but
the American's my favourite.
I mean, if I'm feeling...
Soft egg.
If I'm feeling really out there, then I'll go American hot with extra soft egg. You've got to have soft egg on the
What are you
pizza.
Talking about, soft egg?
Well, if you say egg, then it might not be soft. So they just fry an egg on your pizza.
Oh. I've never had an egg on a pizza, but I like eggs on toast, so I imagine it's not that different.
It's really great. You should try it. But so your links to Pizza Express are strong and
Sorry,
impressive.
I know. I've gone on too much about Pizza Express. It's
No, there should be a whole podcast we do separately about Pizza Express, as far as I'm concerned.
I want them to sponsor the press night for my show.
Okay. Well, did you ever get the free dough balls?
Yes, we were getting there. Sorry. I was just going around about the houses on it. Sorry.
That's all right.
You can cut all of this.
Won't. Shan't.
Please, I know, could get me another pizza. Anyway, they wrote to me and they were like, oh, we'd love to invite you to our Oxford Circus branch for a free meal with a guest. And then I wrote back and I was like, brilliant. She was like, give me your email, we'll set it up. I didn't receive an email. So about a week later, hello, Louisa. Sorry, you did say that you could come to Pizza Express for free and haven't received your email. Please could you let me know when we can come? I'd really chase that up and then... She sorted it out, and then we got there, and they totally forgotten our reservation.
Well, part of me, call me cynical, but part of me wonders who they hoped the guest you'd bring would be.
I don't know.
The devastating reality of being related to a star. In our next clip from my interview with Nicola, she tells me what it was like being a kid who knew she wanted to be an actor when her brother brought home an Oscar-winning actress as his girlfriend. What I loved about this clip was not only the insight into what Gwyneth Paltrow was like as a person and a sister, but also Nicola's honesty about how, as a youngster, she had utter and total belief that she had the talent required to become a hugely successful actor and wouldn't need anybody else's help to achieve it. I'm quite interested in the fact that, obviously, at that little period of your life, because of who Chris married, and you wanting to be an actress, a famous actress came into your life.
Mm-hmm.
How did that affect your expectations of being an actress yourself?
Well, I've given you the Charlie and the Chocolate Factory story. Mm-hmm. So already my expectations were pretty high. And then, but like I say, I had no concept of what Gwyneth's fame meant. I'd never heard of her.
Yeah.
I didn't know. I'll give a shit. Mm. I just liked that she stroked my hair and was really affectionate with me and really fun. And
she comes across as a lovely person as well, you know.
Yeah, she was great.
I listened to her on Dax Shepherd's podcast and she came across as really open and honest.
And she gets so much shit. And a lot of it, she makes herself an easy target in a lot of ways too, because she's, you know, puts herself out there and sometimes suggests quite ludicrous things. But she's, again, like, you know, she's not doing anything bad. She's not trying to hurt anybody. But anyway, so when she came into my life, it was amazing. And, like, you know, I didn't think about her as a famous actress. I just thought about her as my brother's girlfriend that I thought was so cool.
Yeah.
And that used to call me every night when I was at boarding school and I was homesick. And we used to speak on the phone and, like, yeah.
That is the loveliest thing.
You're going to have some good press.
So lovely.
So, I already had the kind of arrogant assumption that my career would be fine. But even then, when Chris started becoming famous, I always knew that I would do it on my own because I didn't think I would need any help.
Mm.
And so I was like, well, I don't need nepotism because I'm...
Yeah.
Did you see me play Mole?
Yeah.
I was so believable. And this is embarrassing for me to admit. And this is when with my show, it's like I'm admitting how stupid I was, you know, and how cocky and not cocky, but just sort of naive and silly. So it's like, yes, I'm putting the thing about Chris out there, but it's like I'm making myself quite vulnerable as well to the world with the show in the hopes that people come and see it and relate to it.
The next clip is from our most listened to guest, Rodri Giggs. Rodri is the brother of Manchester United legend Ryan Giggs and spoke incredibly openly about subjects including adultery and criminality and discussed how these things affected both his family and his life. In this segment, he explained how he was set up by the tabloid press using their infamous fake shake character as they attempted to portray Rodri as a drug dealer and a pimp in the national press, and how the sting saw him lose his job in London, forcing him to move back up to Manchester and eventually end up in jail.
Like when I moved to London, I've got a great job, and then some fake shake decided to stitch me up with the News of the World, and I'm a drug dealer, I'm a pimp, and then I can sack them back in Manchester.
What happened there? I don't know about that story.
You must have heard of the fake shake.
Yeah, yeah.
He stitched up
Sven-Göran Eriksson.
I'm an estate agent. I've met him in a penthouse, servants all around him. I've taken him out to see flats. He says he wants a load of flats. He's going to pay up front. So he's a big commission for himself. But then we get into speaking, saying he's over here. We don't want to be in the West End because we don't want to be seen. Can we go out in places in the East End? So I had places that I could take him. Mm-hmm. And it just it snowballed where he kept on asking me for drugs, I said, listen, I'm not from London. I don't know anyone. I'm not a drug dealer. I don't know anyone in London who's got the drugs.
Yeah.
Anyway, a month later, he says, I'm going back to Manchester this week. And he said, oh, we're in Manchester. We met him in Manchester. He said, can you get any drugs? Well, I know loads of people.
Yeah.
What do you want?
Yeah.
Met him, met the person, give it him, and then he all had it all on camera. And...
Right. So you were secretly filmed, yeah. And they'd spent months basically honeypotting you to stitch you up.
Yeah.
And then when you finally just put them in touch with some other people, they ran a story.
Yeah. I get sacked, moved back to Manchester, but obviously it gets thrown out because the guy lied and just...
So what, did it go to court? Is that what you said?
Yeah, it went to court the first day and the judge threw it out.
So you were on trial for dealing drugs or?
Supposedly, yeah. Even though that I didn't touch
it. No, yeah.
Yeah.
Wow. Wow, I didn't know anything about that. That's really, really, I mean, this fascinating to hear, but also.
In 1999, 2000, it's still in the process with my lawyers about.
Yeah, that must be so devastating on a personal level, though, to lose your job and know
that. It was because.
How can you trust anyone?
Out of all the jobs, and I've been a footballer, I've been a football coach, I've done lots of jobs. That was the most enjoyable job I've ever had. I used to love it.
Yeah. Just...
And then a year later, I get back to Manchester a year later, I'm in prison.
Okay, and what led you to that?
We're in Manchester, and me and my friend, and we go into a nightclub. I go into Euro to have a wee, and then some guys next to me, gigs this, gigs that, blah, 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 blah.
Right.
So I've walked out, gone over to the far side of the club. The guys come over... My other, same again. Just listen, just leave me alone, blah, blah, blah. Just carried on. So I said to him, right, we need to go. Mm. Left the club, went down the stairs outside the club, and him and his mate come out again. Fight breaks out. Them two get beat up, and I go to prison.
Right. So to me, that sounds like basically you know, Manchester...
The guy was a Manchester City fan.
Right. So Manchester's such like a goldfish bowl that the reality is that you're known, your face is known, and people just use you to try and have a laugh with their mates and wind you up.
Yeah.
I bet, how many times has that kind of stuff happened over your life?
Not many times, because I'm, like I say, I used to be with some naughty people, but
right.
It can happen.
That must be, I mean, you know, what horrible stuff to happen. It is what it is.
Yeah,
you've just given a shrug.
This is the stuff you've got to deal with it, and that people don't know that you've got to deal with.
Yeah.
But yeah, you've got to deal with it. What are you going to do?
In this next clip, Rodri explains what happened on the day the tabloids released the story that said that his brother, Ryan, had been having an affair with his wife for nearly a decade. He speaks candidly about how he found out and what he sees as false attempts at reconciliation between himself and his wife after the story broke.
Took the kids to Spain the day before.
Yeah.
And turned the phone off, so...
But was there any attempt at reconciliation with you after all this happened?
Yes, it was all... Not real, it was all fake. Just, I feel sorry for you, I'll do and say the right things, but it was all, yeah.
Yeah. I'm going to ask a mad question, but it just kind of occurred to me. Do you think that would have happened if, let's say, Ryan wasn't a footballer, but you'd been married and he was your brother?
100% no.
So what is it about him and his life as a footballer and as a famous person that led him to do that?
He's just become a young, humble, hard-working guy who becomes still the hard-working guy, but a cocky, arrogant, thinks he can get away with anything person.
Yeah.
Which obviously he can't.
Phoebe Eclair Powell, writer daughter of comedian Jenny Eclair, was a huge highlight of series one for me. She spoke so warmly, but also honestly, about how her mum wasn't always totally present, and in her words, could be a massive toddler. In this clip, she explains how that part of her mum's nature saw her being fired from the ITV show Loose Women.
Do you know, I feel, okay, so I suppose that, like, it, and it wasn't even, like, fame, because I think it changed a bit. When my mum was on Loose Women, that was a different kind of fame, and suddenly we would,
was
like...
A, was she a regular then for a while?
She was a regular for a while, and then she was very naughty, and her and Janet Street Porter drew some offensive sort of cocks and balls on, like, Miley and Klaas, and...
Wait,
opera singer, what's her name?
Don't try and... Catherine Jenkins, I'm sure you're thinking of. Don't try and glaze over this. So what happened to your mum on Loose Women?
They drew
some phallic symbols.
Yes, I love it, phallic symbols. So my mum, basically, I think, I don't know why she does this. She's been fired from quite a few jobs in her life. I think she was fired from LBC for breaking a window as well. She's like, she's naughty. My mum is a massive toddler. Like, she is still a five-year-old that just wants to make everyone laugh, but she has a really short attention span. And she was working on Loose Women, and I think her and Janet Street Porter were quite naughty together. And they went round the offices of ITV, and they just thought it'd be hilarious to get a biro out and start drawing all over these, like, official photographs on the walls. And then, obviously, I think it was the Daily Mail, the Sun got wind of it, and, like, blew it all out of proportion and was like, you know, anti-feminist, drawing dicks on other female celebrities, how dare they? I think Miley and Klaas actually said that she found it very funny, but Catherine Jenkins was a little bit upset.
The final best-of clip from Series 1 is from the episode where comedian and author David Baddiel interviewed me about my childhood growing up with television presenter Angus Deaton, who was my stepfather from when I was about 3 to 13 years old. Here I answered David's question about what it was like when tabloid scandal hit the family and what my relationship was like with Angus after he left.
Well, Angus, as we know, I think Angus will be okay with saying this, has had a number of, you know, difficult moments with the British press and his private life. And he's probably more well known for the scandal that affected him later on when he was with someone else we know called Lisa Mayer. When he got sacked from Have I Got News For You, but he had had this previous scandal involving your mum, so most people maybe don't know that.
Yeah, so my mum, Angus left my mum in 1993, about February 1993, and they'd been together for 9 years, and they obviously owned this big house together, and over the time that they'd lived in this house, as you kind of alluded to, Angus got a lot more famous and a lot more rich, and so... during that period of time, he put in a swimming pool and a tennis court into the house.
Cool.
And, you know, we had some amazing times, incredibly fortunate upbringing and, you know, having loads of parties and having friends around. And they had these big, lavish kind of showbiz parties as well. I think Angus very, you know, enjoyed that side of it, absolutely. Mm. And then in 19...
And still does.
And I'm sure. Well, I know he does, yeah. Mm. I don't know why I said it like that. That's completely bizarre. Me too. I think that probably comes from there as well, I would have thought. And then in 1993, he left. And I'd say, honestly, I don't remember a thing about it.
Right.
But I have a lot of evidence of what happened based on, you know, what my mum tells me and also newspaper clippings and all that kind of stuff. But,
This was a time when, you know, before the internet, the tabloid press were enormously powerful and they completely lived on celebrity scandal. Mm-hmm. You know, there's less of it now since Leveson. I mean, obviously, they still do it, and the whole Harry and Meghan thing to some extent is a sort of throwback to that, even though it doesn't involve adultery or anything. But it's all still about the privacy of a famous couple. But every week in the News of the World or whatever, there would be some footballer, some TV star has had an affair, is leaving their wife, blah, blah, blah.
That's how they sell their newspapers.
That's how they sold their newspaper. Mm-hmm. So it was part of that, really. Angus was...
Yeah. So what I can say is, and you know, I want to stress again, actually, I've only stressed this about my dad, but I'd say it about Angus as well. Angus and I have never had a serious conversation either. Like, Angus and I get on really, really well. I know he cares about me a great deal. He's been very excellent to me throughout the time that we've, you know, been back in touch, which is probably nigh on, you know, 15, nearly 20 years now. But we've never had a conversation about my mum. We've never had a conversation about this time, and I doubt we ever will. He's just of that generation where he doesn't open up in that way.
I have had a number of... when things are very bad with Angus, and I probably won't go into this in depth, I had a number of quite heavy conversations with Angus where I felt this is not usual for Angus to be vulnerable. But I think one thing which you alluded to there, which is part of that, is since you got back in touch... So there was a point where you were estranged from Angus?
Yeah, so they broke up in 1993, and then there was a 2-year period of court lawyer stuff to do with the house, and it was to do with it was basically to do with, as far as I know, and as far as from what I've seen, it was to do with what we talked about before, which is when they met, my mum was a lot more successful, and then when they broke up, Angus was a lot more successful. And actually, my mum by that point had got nodules on her throat and wasn't earning any money, and only had what she had in the house, with which to then bring us up and live her life after that. So there was 2 years of that, and then so when he left from 1993, when he left, my mum, I have to say, was always very consistent in saying to me, you know, you need to keep your relationship with Angus. It's very important.
Was angry with Angus.
Oh. Absolutely, I'll start with this, which is okay. At no point did she say anything other than, you know, I want you to stay in touch with Angus. I want you to, and the reason I know that is because the feeling I really remember from that period is a mix of I'm not sure I believe you, and I know if I see him or get in touch with him, you'll ask me about that.
Right.
And I felt incredibly uncomfortable in those things, so it felt easier to not really be in touch with him. And I think there were maybe 2 or 3 occasions where he sent me a birthday present, or I went to a football match with him, but it very quickly kind of became an estrangement. Yeah, we didn't see each other.
There's surely one other big problem, and tell me if you want to edit this out, but I'm going to mention it anyway. Wasn't your mum actually talking to the press?
Yeah. So after he left, and like I said, you know, I've only really got one side of the story on this, but basically it became a matter of how much percentage of the house does my mum get and how much does Angus get. And there was a fight about that, basically. And over that period of time, as far as I'm aware, my mum was being offered a lot of, I mean, I know that we had paparazzi, if you want to call it that, outside our house all the time. We had journalists calling us up all the time, speaking to my brother if he answered the phone, all of this kind of stuff. And my mum being offered a lot of money by the press to tell her side of the story.
And she did.
Which she eventually did. Now, her argument, you know, and when she did do that, we lost all of our friends and all of our family, all of the people on that side, or mutual friends of Angus and my mum's, we never spoke to again.
Right.
So it was, you know, and she was aware
really
that was going to happen.
Not in a very prurient way, but because this is a podcast about fame and about growing up around fame. Mm-hmm. And I don't know how, because I haven't listened to all the episodes, but one thing about fame is it involves quite a lot of time playing out in public incredibly difficult stuff, you know, and so that's happened to you.
Yeah.
You know, you've really been, as a child or teenager, at the centre of a public huge thing, really, between the two people at the time.
I was 10. Right, I wasn't even a teenager, which I think would have...
Thing, which would now be called hashtag Team Stephanie, hashtag Team Angus, of, like, the public deciding, you know, that this is a battle.
Yeah.
You're sort of... Obviously, you're with your mum, but at the same time, you're kind of in the middle of that. So when you say Angus wanted to take me to football, or Angus wanted to do that, you know... It isn't just, you know, I've split up with your mum. It's everyone knows.
No, but what I'd say is during that period, whilst we were, you know, during the 3 or 4 occasions where he would send me a birthday present or I go to a football match, that was in the 2 years since. So there was 2 years from when he left to when, or a year and a half to when then my mum sold the story.
Right.
Which was a 3-day story in The Sun.
Right, okay.
Actually.
Yeah.
And there were lots and lots of stories in the kind of 18 months before that that were either a friend of, or a friend of Angus's says, or a friend of Stephanie says she's doing fine now or whatever. But when she actually properly sold her story for a lot of money, that was kind of 18 months on. And then what happened the moment she did that, and I'm not talking about this with any pride at all, I talk about this in terms of the way she describes it, which is necessity, financial necessity, because she couldn't afford a lawyer. She wasn't earning any money.
Mm.
And it was being dug out until a potential court case of, if you can, you know, the way she tells it is, unless I go to court, I'm going to have to accept giving away 50% of this house, which is every bit of money I have, when actually I put in a much bigger chunk.
Yeah, I don't think on this podcast that you need to defend your mum's decisions. What I'm interested in is how it felt for you to be in that situation. Did your mum say to you, for example, when she decided to tell the story, OK, I'm going to do this, we need the money, people might mention it to you at school and, you know, be prepared?
This is where it comes down to a bit of the fact that I think I was a little bit too young and what I blocked out. But what I know, my brother, who was 13 at the time, was really across all of it and hated every part of it and wanted nothing to do with any of it. And it was a real, real problems because he hated every bit of publicity that was happening. And he was a lot more affected by it than me. Or if I was affected by it, I don't remember so much. What I know is in hindsight, it's a really difficult situation to look back on and see. And I, you know, we have all of that stuff and I've gone through all of that stuff. And it's very, very difficult because, you know, you feel a loyalty. I feel a loyalty to my mother, absolutely. And I was present for all of that. And I saw exactly how hard that time was for her. But also, you know, it's like, I think if I totally judged my dad on some of his behavior or Angus on what happened around that time to some degree, then I just, you know, it's like I'd never speak to a man again. The first clip from series 2, where the podcast opened up to me interviewing people who are famous or have experienced fame about how it has affected their lives and mental health, is from when I asked actor and writer Ralph Little perhaps the most difficult question of all: are you famous? He goes off into some fascinating areas when answering the question, including how his fame enabled him to be more confident and successful in his personal life, especially when he was younger. Are you famous? Do you think yourself as famous?
That's a good question. I mean, today, yeah, I'm buzzing.
What a day I got you here.
Yeah, today I'm back. It's a very good question. How do you measure that metric? I suppose so. I mean, I've been jokingly referring to myself as a national treasure for years, but that's probably more to cover up my fears that I'm nowhere near. Do people recognise me? Yes. Do people recognise me every day? No.
Did that happen at a different point? Do you feel like you're slightly less recognised now than you were previously?
Maybe, but only marginally, because the people who liked what I did are still the same people.
Yeah.
You become extremely aware of aging when you're in my game, and when you are, we're still debating whether I am or not famous, but you could become very aware of aging. And it's not about going, oh, I hope my looks, you know, don't fade. I mean, I'm privileged not to have to worry about that because I've never traded on my looks.
Right.
Yeah. I've not got the raw materials to work with.
You're a handsome man, Ralph, and I'm sure that's.
Very kind of you.
No,
to say
but
so.
I think it's easy to say that. I think you're a handsome guy, but do you not feel like you've got roles because of your looks? You're saying there's more to it, or not that I'm saying you have.
All right, I'll tell you what then. Well, I hope this isn't too much of a digression, but I think this is interesting since we're talking in depth and you've gone there. It's very lovely of you to say that, that I'm a handsome man. This is very embarrassing to have to talk about, but we'll be open. That's a genuine surprise to hear you say that. Okay. That is not how I see myself. I never have.
And that's not you saying that because you want to come across as
self-deprecating. No,
or
I think it's more, I'm trying to just be interesting and I'm trying to be interesting because I want to be interesting. But fuck it, let's be honest. You know, when we did 2 Pints, you know, Will Mellor's the hunky, big, muscular one, and I'm the gawky, okay, skinny, pale one. Mm. That's just the way it is.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think I've ever been thought of as a, certainly not a sex symbol or somebody who's thought of as handsome or somebody whatever. So when people say that I don't think anybody thinks, oh, he's that ugly dude for me.
Yeah.
But I don't think I particularly walk into a room and then people go, oh, he's a good looking lad. Mm-hmm. Never have thought that.
Yeah.
So whenever people, and it makes it sound like they say it a lot, but whenever somebody like you says something like that, for a start, thanks. Like, it makes my fucking day.
Good.
Right? So, seriously, it does.
Good. I'm not just sycophantically saying
no,
it.
No,
because
I just think it's an interesting conversation because we're talking about like perception and mental health.
But I also think, you know, I don't know a lot about your personal life, but I don't think you've ever had any struggles in your personal life in terms of meeting women.
No, but you see.
But you also do have personality to back it up.
I got a bit of chat when it comes to chatting to the girls, or I did anyway. I'm too old for that now. I've always just kind of like had a bit of chat and always assumed that, you know, once I can get over the initial hurdle of saying hello, because I didn't have the handsome good looks to be able to like just so babe, suddenly being on TV when I was like 18, suddenly girls who would never talk to me, suddenly it's like, oh yeah, that lad off the TV. And once I've got that initial step over with, then I can kind of use chat.
So I think that's an interesting point as well to go into about fame, which is, you know, you're talking about a time before you were famous where, you know, let's say girls weren't coming up to you in that way, and then suddenly you're on TV and they did. How does that work in terms of your own mentality, in terms of was there any part of you at that point was like, well, you only like me because I'm on TV? Or did you not care? It was just like jackpot.
100% the latter. I mean, right. I knew that they only liked me because I was on TV, but I didn't care.
And take advantage of
that. I liked them because they were gorgeous. Do you know what I mean? Yeah. It's only... Their attribute was piercing, beautiful blue eyes with long blonde hair or whatever, and my attribute was the job I did. That's all right. We play to our strengths. Yeah. Play the hand you dealt.
I find that an interesting... But as someone who's never experienced that, I do... Yeah. I think... I mean, I'm also not 18, so it would have probably been different if I'd experienced that when I was 18. But I've talked in some episodes about... I was asked by David Baddiel in the episode, would you like to be famous? Do you want to be famous? And I said, the fear for me would be if people are looking at me while I walk down the street, why are they looking at me? And they don't know me, you know, it gives me a bit of fear. But maybe if it was when I was 18, I would have been young enough where I would be just like embrace that.
I could see that, actually. I'm less, bizarrely less, the more knowledge I've got over the years, the less confident I've become.
Right. That's a good point.
It's very weird that, you know, I don't walk with the same swagger that I used to. It's not that I'm like lacking confidence, but I'm like, right, I need to kind of make sure I earn this every day. Whereas, honestly, when... I wish I could meet me when I was like 18, 19. I would have been like, mate, just calm down. I honestly thought I was the absolute tits. Just at everything, in every way, yeah. I thought I was great. There was a room till we walked in, I thought I was going to be the cleverest person in the room.
And did that piss people off?
Well, I didn't think so. I used to think everybody was like, he's great. But I look back now and I was like, did they? Or did they not think I was kind of a bit much?
Right.
Probably, yeah. Looking back, I would have thought I was a bit much.
Yeah.
Probably... This is pure guesswork, speculation, but I wouldn't be surprised if people had a bit of like, I certainly think I was liked by people, but I wouldn't be at all surprised if there was quite a bit of eye rolling. Oh, right. God, he's off again.
Like arrogance, yeah. Eye rolling, yeah.
Yeah. And I used to kind of run, I mean, you know, I still do, but the weight of it has shifted somewhat, but I used to, particularly even in auditions or like my on-set persona, I'd kind of like have this... faux like arrogance, like postmodern arrogance, like I think I'm great at everything, and so, I mean I don't really, but
it's a persona. It's a persona. Higher status,
exactly,
persona. Yeah.
Exactly. I was playing a higher status persona, but I have a feeling that
not everyone got it,
yeah. Or that I wasn't doing it as deftly as I thought I was, and often kind of just seemed a bit of a dick.
And is that their fault for not getting it, or your fault for not judging it?
It's my fault. But again, we're asking sort of very, very big questions here. Was that because of being famous at 18? Undoubtedly, that had a part to play. But then again, are all 18-year-olds kind of a bit like that?
Yes, true.
Who wasn't?
You find your way.
Who wasn't a dick when
in?
They were 19 years old? I think we all were at some point.
That's a
good
point. As a huge football fan, it was a real honour to be able to interview ex-England international Sean Wright Phillips. We discussed at length what it was like to follow in the footsteps of his father, Ian Wright, who also played for England and is a legend at Arsenal. In this clip, Sean explained how he would play differently as a kid if his dad was watching, and how he had to learn from that to improve his overall game.
I always played, I wouldn't say so much better, but more for the team when my dad wasn't watching.
Really?
Yeah. When he was watching, I always felt like he's a professional. I need to impress.
Right.
So then I start trying to do everything on my own, which it should have been the opposite. But he spoke to me about that and I learned that. And then times after that, when he did come and watch, I was just more natural with it.
That's so fascinating, because that seems to me like a natural thing that you would do maybe if there were scouts on the sidelines. Do you know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
I need to impress to try and get up to the next level on the ladder. But the fact that it's your own dad, that you felt, you know, you can cut away the fact that he's your dad, but you're thinking, because he is a professional footballer, I need to impress him. That's a really interesting mindset, I think.
Yeah, that was part of like my naivety. I've done it the wrong way around then. And obviously he's explained it, but it used to be fun because there was things when me and my brother used to go and stay at his house when he had a game after a game and stuff. He would lock us in the garden to do kick-ups. He said unless we did like 50 kick-ups, we wasn't allowed like back in the house. So me and my brother would be out there trying to get these kick-ups done.
Do you think that was him genuinely trying to improve your skills, or did he just not want you in the house for half an hour?
I think it was obviously he was trying to improve our skills, but he's a practical joker, so to him that would have been funny. And he would have just been sat there just chilling, watching TV, waiting for us to do it. But it was cool, and it taught us in a way how to manipulate the football.
In our next clip, comedian and TV presenter Matt Richardson explains how he got his big break as presenter of The Extra Factor alongside Caroline Flack. It's a story of talent meeting luck with a huge dash of a common theme that's been present when I've interviewed people on the podcast about their big career breaks. That being that when the opportunity to interview for these jobs came along, my guests often didn't think they had a chance, so had a kind of don't give a shit attitude about it that in the end seemed to tend to help them be themselves and get the gig.
My agent got an email from ITV going, we'd like to see Matt about a job on The Extra Factor, if he'd like to come in. And I was kind of like, fine. And it turns out the ITV2 commissioner had been to see Angela and I in Edinburgh and had really liked it.
And you didn't know?
We didn't know.
Probably best you didn't know.
Probably best. And she hadn't even gone because she'd been asked. She kind of just picked a few random shows and we just happened to be one of the shows she picked because we were at a time where there was nothing else on. And and then they asked me in and I was kind of thinking, okay, what they're going to be doing is, it was when Caroline Flack and Ollie Mers were hosting it together. Yeah. And I kind of went, oh, what they'll be doing is adding a comedian like on the Jungle spin-off where they used to have a comedian doing like 5 minutes of stand-up every week. So I was like, all right, cool, I'll go in for this meeting, yeah, whatever. And I went in with the executive of X Factor and basically they were like, so this is to replace Ollie. Ollie's going to be leaving and we're looking for someone to fill that spot with Caroline.
And was this a meeting or an audition?
No, so this was a meeting. So it started with a meeting and they basically sat me down and went, what would you change about the show? And as soon as they went, it's to replace Ollie Mers, I'd never done telly. I'd maybe done one of those talking head shows.
Yeah.
But nothing else.
Yeah.
So I was like, well, I'm not going to get this. So I had no pressure on it. So I just went, I would change everything. I was like, I don't like the way...
Had you been a regular viewer of the show?
No, I hadn't. But, like, I'd seen enough that I knew what it was.
You prepped.
And like, yeah, and also, because of Caroline and Ollie, like, the whole thing when they were doing it was, let's flirt and, you know, all that kind of stuff. And I went, I hate all that. Let's get rid of that. I wouldn't dare flirt with Caroline. Like, it's just not... I wouldn't like to do it. Like, I think it'd be a different relationship. Like, I don't enjoy that on telly. Mm-hmm. And apparently after I got the job, they went, you're the only one that said they wouldn't have flirted with it. Everyone else was like, well, obviously, I'll carry on the flirting, all the guys.
Right.
And then they kind of went, okay, do you want to come in for a screen test with Caroline? And I'd worked with Caroline already. We did a pilot together of what would end up being Viral Tap with Charlie Baker and Aisling Bean, which was a really fun pilot. And so we got in, and because we'd met and we'd been on a night out together, we sort of had a bit of chemistry anyway.
Yeah.
And we basically just, I pissed around in this screen test.
Yeah.
So it was in front of all of the Psycho and ITV lot and... and the thing that apparently got me the job was Caroline kept saying to me, and she said this the whole way through the shows we presented together, was she always used to make me stand slightly behind her because it made her look smaller. So she kind of told me that at the beginning of this screen test, and I accidentally kind of was stood in front of her, and I went, oh, sorry, I'll move back again so you look less fat. And they were filming it, and they left that line in my tape, and that's the tape they sent to Simon Cowell.
Right.
And that's the joke he cast me off.
Oh, really?
Because I said that and it made him laugh. Because everyone else had been like flirting with her and I wasn't afraid to make her look silly, which is fine because Caroline was very good at being the butt of the joke. Like she really enjoyed that.
Yeah.
And no one else would do it with her, but I wasn't bothered about it.
Yeah, so for the audience or those of you not involved in TV, Psycho is the production company that make X Factor with Fremantle and whatever. Mm-hmm. And it's Simon Cowell's company. That's why it's called Psycho, obviously named it after himself. And... it interests me that it does go all the way up to him. Like, even those decisions for the spin-off shows.
So he wasn't even on my series. It was Gary Barlow my year.
Yeah.
But Simon is still very much involved. Yeah. And, like, when the first shows go out, like, I'd never met him while I was on the show, but you'd always get an exec coming up going, Simon's really happy with what you're doing.
Oh, God.
And, like, you'd just occasionally get, like, a little bit of information about what Simon liked.
Right.
And which is quite nice. And then I did meet him after I'd done the show and he was really nice.
Yeah.
Well, I met him and he was really nice. I was quite drunk at an awards do and I went up to him and asked him for my P45 because I wasn't going back. And he thought that was funny and was really lovely and kind about it. But
it didn't get you back on.
No, I didn't get the show back. but yeah, it kind of went all the way up to the top. And then I kind of did that and I was like, we'll see. But I thought it'd gone well. And Caroline was messaging me going, it was really good. We really like you. We've not heard anything. And we kind of kept in touch. And it was really weird because it was Ollie Mers that was leaving. It was in the paper every day. Like, there were odds on who was going to replace him. Wow. So like Nick Grimshaw, Greg James, like all these kind of big people.
Yeah.
And about 2 weeks, 3 weeks before it was announced, they called me to be like, you've got the job, which was amazing, like really cool. Mm. But they kept running all these things. So I was like, I should go and put a bet on myself.
Absolutely.
But then that's insider
trading.
Insider trading,
yeah. So you have to get your mate.
So I didn't do it. But But yeah, yeah, and it kind of, and then it got announced. Yeah. So we're resounding, who the fuck is he?
In the final clip of this best of episode, one of my favourite comedians, colleagues and people, Rhys James, tells us whether he thinks he's in the business for fame or for the success, and gives an interesting insight into whether he thinks other comedians are being totally honest when they're asked the same question.
Do you think your ambition as a performer is linked in any way to fame? Or do you think you're just interested in success and, say, for instance, the financial side of that would bring you the comfort, the safety?
It's a really difficult question to answer that because it's hard to separate them at all. Because you can't think of success in this career without thinking of fame, really. I mean, yes, you can be successful without being famous, but there's a ceiling on that. So really the most successful ones are the famous ones. So it's hard to go back. I'd have to go back to before I started and go, what was I actually looking for here? Mm-hmm. And it would be, I think comedians are idealistic. A lot of comedians say, when they're not in a podcast format where you're encouraged to be as honest as possible, would say, no, I just want to be successful and fame is a byproduct of that. I think that's a little bit bullshit. I think it's a little bit bollocks. Yes, really, I'm about the work. So I wouldn't want to be famous for the sake of being famous. Like I say, I'm not a personality. I wouldn't want to be an influencer.
No.
Who, because then there's no product. So then when it's going, oh, loads of people seem to really like you. There's a million people now who follow you and like you and want something from you. And you go, well, what? What can I give them? I don't have a skill. I'm not saying they're not skilled, but I don't have a thing that they know me for that they're expecting now.
Thanks again so much for listening to the show, guys. Your support's amazing. And please do tell any friends or family you have who love a podcast all about us. Once again, do add us on Instagram at Almost Famous the Podcast and Twitter at Pod Almost Famous. And like I said at the top, if you have any questions that you'd like read out in series 3 of the show, please do email them in to almostpodcastfamous@gmail.com. That's almostpodcastfamous@gmail.com. And I'll speak to you again in a couple of weeks' time. Thanks a lot.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.